Yo.
Hey, yo.
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 How you doing, Gabe?
I'm doing swell. I'm
Are we
doing
talking about video games?
well, Si.
This feels like we need
I was
another
born ready.
intro because for people listening, this is just another episode, but we haven't recorded since what? A few months.
It's been a while.
So it
It's good
feels
to
like a
be
comeback.
back. Good to be back.
Good to be back on the what, Gabe?
On the beat.
I was going for the
No.
name of the podcast, but that.
Oh.
I like where your head's at. This is
Take
good.
two, take two.
This is
Back
good.
on S rank support.
Woo! Mazel tov. Okay.
And
So.
I'm super excited about today's episode because this is going to bring to a close the second of our official game swaps. So we had our first game swap, Inscription for 13 Sentinels, and our second game swap is Astral Chain, which you gave to me, and I wanted to reciprocate with another game that I thought did combat in a very fun, challenging, but engaging way. And what game did I give you, Sai?
Give me Sifu, a
Sifu.
kung fu beat 'em up game, published by Slow Clap is the name of the publisher. Yeah, another weird timeline thing as far as when this is getting recorded versus when it's heard. So you finished Astral Chain in what? Like, we're recording this first day of February in 2025, just
Yeah.
to date us. You finished that in what, like August or July of last year or something like
Yeah,
that?
I remember I
You
was
flew
home,
through
so
that.
it was late summer.
I started Sifu last summer. And had a very rocky start.
As
We'll
most
talk, which
do.
we'll,
As most
yeah,
do.
which we'll talk about.
Yeah.
And picked it up a little bit, like halfway through last school semester during the fall. And then I finished the very ending of the game today, about
Today,
5 hours ago.
just 5 hours ago. So it's
So
fresh.
very fresh,
It's
very fresh.
fresh.
Very
It's
excited to be talking about
hot
it.
out the oven.
Well, we have a ton of talk about with this game. I'm really excited to, but first of all, because I don't think I know, I want to hear from you why you chose this game. When did you play it? Where did it come from? Where did you go? Cotton Eye Joe.
Cotton Eye Joe.
Good. Take it away.
I was first introduced to this game a few years ago. I think it was not too long after it came out. So I don't remember exactly when I played it, but it was 2 or 3 years ago. My brother got it for himself. I guess he was really looking forward to it because he picked up the special edition, which they call the Vengeance Edition, which is really cool, but I couldn't tell you what it included. Besides, it had the steel case, the steel book, which is very nice to hold. But besides that, I can't remember what it included. I saw him break into it, and I can't exactly remember if I just wanted to play it after watching him play it, or if he actually like recommended that I play it. I'm pretty sure he beat it before I picked it up, and then he was like, "I highly recommend it, I think." And I decided to give it a try because it looked good, and I really liked the art style, and the gameplay looked very, very fun. And so I did, and it really pulled me in. I loved the just the experience of it, how challenging it was, really, really drew me in. And we can talk about like what makes that successful, and because I'm sure you had a similar experience where, I started playing it and then it absolutely kicked my butt, and I was like, well, I can either put this down now or power through it. And this game is it's unique in its the way it presents sort of difficulty and challenges to the player, but also gives the player like a platform to improve on. I think that's, kind of where it excels and what we'll be talking about a lot. But
yeah,
when I played it 2 or 3 years ago, per via a recommendation. Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Yeah. Thanks for the background. Yeah. I don't think we had talked about exactly. Mm-hmm. You just sent me what you wanted me to play.
Yeah. And I was like, all right, the recommendation probably came out of left field because you hadn't, had you heard of it at that?
I'd heard of it. I knew it was a popular game, but I didn't know anything about it.
Okay. There you go.
I recognize the title as a Chinese title, like a Chinese word, but that was about all I knew, all I could infer about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was so excited to give it to you because I just think the meat of this game, the really good meat of it, is just combat.
Yeah.
And it's fun and unique. And I think that's what Astral Chain's strengths were
Astral
as well.
Train.
Astral. Woo, woo. Okay. Before I was so rudely interrupted.
Sorry.
Yeah, I do think the meat of this game is in the combat, just like it was with Astral Train.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I just thought the games kind of complement each other in that sense. So I was excited to give it to you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm super excited, especially because this is so fresh. You finished it just a few hours ago.
Yeah, this is a really weird thing for me because it feels really fresh as if I've played the whole thing in one sitting, and also really not fresh because I've been, I'll use the word struggling to finish this game since the summer. Because it kicked my butt at the beginning and I was having a really tough time with it. And I felt the sense of getting better slowly, but then I just ran out of time. And when I did have time, I wasn't in the mood to just get my butt kicked. So that got us where we are here today. And then I finally finished it. But I think before we talk about it, just to be very clear, Sifu spoilers will be happening.
Yes. Yeah.
If you haven't played the game, go play the game for yourself and pause this and come back and listen. We can all share our thoughts together. But what were you going to say?
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of information that you learned because you just beat it the first time, but there is like a replay that they encourage where the storyline is a little different. Mm-hmm. And then also some like lore and gang dynamics that I either never knew or forgot about and... but maybe new at one point. So it's nice to just refresh it prior to this recording. But
yeah. So let's start off by, I think we should start off just by talking about the core meat and potatoes of it. I can talk a little bit about my playthrough of it, and then we can circle back at the end and talk about all the cool lore stuff that I've been geeking about.
I think
today.
That's a great framework for what we're going to do.
So I
do want to ask, what was it like picking up the game, going into it? Obviously, it was challenging, but I feel like my million-dollar question for this game is, how did it feel to, overcome that and then get to the next level or maybe retry a level and, finish it at an even younger age and then slowly progress through these stages in that fashion? Just talk me through your experience
and
development.
I definitely can say this is one of the most rewarding games I've ever played. I would assume you and I probably had really similar experiences because you and I play really similar games, which usually is not this type of game. You and I like to play lots of strategy games where you're not making split second real time decisions. You're making, I'm going to stare at this grid for 30 minutes until I get the perfect move, right?
Or JRPG Auto Battler, where you're just looking at the fun stuff and not doing anything.
Yeah. And I've joked with you and lots of other people before. I am FromSoft games. I'm not good at stuff like that. This is not the type of stuff I'm good at. So, I was really surprised off the bat. One thing I'll just throw out there. So I played this on the Switch. I don't know what you played this on. Yeah.
I played it on the PlayStation.
Yeah. So just to share a little bit about my experience with this, it's been really funny today looking more into the game after the fact and seeing all this footage of it on PlayStation consoles, this game is like looks so much better visually than I was ever aware of. Like, I've been watching all these cutscenes and stuff, and like it's not like it's the most detailed stuff in the world, but like there's
No.
like cool facial expressions going on, and
Yeah.
like all the visuals and the characters look really good. Look, I'm telling you, if you're listening and you want to play this game and all you have is a Switch, that's fine. Like, that's what I did. I made it through. I played the whole game. If you have the option, I literally today I actually ordered a copy for the PS5 because I think I
Yes.
might I
Oh,
do
yeah.
want to play this game again, but I think I would not I don't want to pl I want to play it how
You
it's
will
supposed to
enjoy it
look.
so much more, I think, on a PlayStation for
Yeah,
sure.
it's mostly a visual downgrade on the Switch, but there's definitely some frame rate issues. I don't know what they did, but like it's really great at like none of the frame rate performance crap is happening like during combat. So that's good. The only times it'll show up is like every time you open a door and go into a new room, like things will stutter for a second. And just visually it's way downgraded, and like during cutscenes there's way less just facial stuff going. Anyway, so like I didn't know until a few hours ago how like fluid and good this game also looks.
Yeah.
So first of all, there's that. Yeah, so I started off by getting my butt kicked. I started playing the game in, I think June or July of this past year, so it was quite a bit of time ago. The first thing that really blew my mind, and I was kind of excited for us to get to talk about, is really love like the music sound integration with the game. And the first time I noticed this was in the second level. It's called the club, right? I think. Is that right?
The club, yeah, that should be the second level, right?
Yeah, and like this is part of why I want to replay the game, is just to pay more attention to the stuff. But in the club in particular, like literally every time you start a new combat, that combat ends, you open a door to another room. Like all of these times, there's some audio element in the music that's entering or going away or getting more intense. And I know this is stuff you and I like to nerd out about in particular, because this goes into stuff like middleware and video game music composition and all that stuff. So that really blew me away. And then also, it's just like the club is such a cool, like visually aesthetically
Oh,
pleasing
yeah.
level, which I imagine also probably looks way better on the PlayStation.
Yeah, I think you'll really like that. And I remember very little of this game because it was a few years ago, but I do remember the first time I stepped into the club because it's also just like it's a riot too, because like there's that thumping EDM, and the club, it's hard. And there's one fight, it's one of the early rooms. I think it's where they introduce the tall lady in the like high boots that are like with platforms that are like a kind of a more challenging enemy. And the first time you fight them, it's just one girl on like a dance floor, and there's someone in the back like DJing, and it's so lively, and it feels so cool and yet so natural. And so I definitely do remember enjoying the club quite a bit.
So I'm trying to think back, because like again, my experience with this game is so split in half, because it feels like a lot of like the work I had to put into learning this game happened a long time ago now. But a lot of like the other aspects of my experience are way more recent. But yeah, like the first level is more like, it's not a tutorial level, but it's slowly building up to the game. I probably spent, I don't know how much time I spent on it, but it definitely took me a handful of attempts to get through that first level. I think there's just a lot of new, like not new to the game, but just in general, like there's a lot of cool mechanics going on in the game. Like when we're talking about all these like FromSoft games and like Sekiro and all these things. There's like all these different games that are all about like parrying or dodging or like all these things. And I've not done stuff like that. So I was having to get used to the whole parry and structure system in this game, which I just think is really, really clever.
Yeah, and I think they did it really well too, because Sekiro is the only other title where I can passionately say like the guard breaking system is just done like to a T. It's done so well, and it feels so good when you break an enemy's posture, and you really feel it when yours is broken, and you have that moment of panic, you know, that you're like, oh, there's nothing I can do for this like one full second. It feels like the longest second of your life, because you're so engaged. And
I mean, right off the bat, I loved how the combat feels in general. Like even on playing it on the Switch, like it feels pretty dang fluid, and like you're just hopping between enemies, and you're constantly blocking incoming attacks, and you're like punching them in the face or pushing them away. Like it's all really fast, and that feels awesome. I love all of the like takedown moves. I think if anything impressed me the most, like I would love to talk to whoever did like the choreography for this game. I don't even know what you would call that in a game team role, but like whoever they hired who like knows what kung fu looks like.
Yeah, like a like fight just, choreography consultant.
There's some of the takedowns like, where mean? Like the camera will turn and the protagonist will like jab someone in the neck and then do like 50 slaps like on their like like it's awesome. It's like so fast paced, really, really cool. I mean, I feel like one of the best things a fighting game can do is just make the player feel like a badass. And this game like makes you feel like a badass especially when you start getting better, right? And the other thing I feel like this game really did well and helped me like kind of stick with it when I could was like everything feels fair, which I think is another really cool balance to try to meet with something like this. Like from the very start of the game at the prologue, they give you all the tools for the basis of how the combat works. They're like, here's all the tools you need. This is how it works. And from there, they just let you go. And so that kind of puts you in this frame of, okay, if I'm having a challenging time with a fight, like they've told me everything I need. Trying to think if there's any exceptions to that, but I don't really think there are. Like combat wise, they've given you all the things you need to know. So when I was having a tough time with not even the bosses, but like sub bosses, even, you know, I was able to come at it with a thought of like, okay, what can I be doing different? Because there's clearly something that I'm not doing correct. I remember being way too aggressive. And I think there's some people that probably like to play in that way. But like, this is a game where there's lots of moments where if you are too like aggressive, you can really quickly get in a situation where you like are getting way ahead of yourself. And now there's a ton of dudes throwing punches at you and all the, like your health goes down in like 2 seconds. And it's like, what happened? Right.
What? Yeah. There's a flow a lot of the times where you're like in and you're out. And personally, I'm a sucker for parrying mechanics just in any shape and form. If I can raise my sword to deflect an opponent's sword and I get that, you know, visual, auditory, any sort of haptic feedback where, you know, I'm safe because I met you with a blow that you threw first. There's just something that feels so good about that. And I get that from games like Sifu and Sekiro. And I'm definitely of the player type where I will just stand there until someone makes a move, because it feels so good for me to have someone dish it out. And then I am like, nope, I will dish it right back to you and then proceed, you know? And so I'll almost laugh, because sometimes I'll be standing there for like 5 seconds waiting for someone, because I will never throw the first move. And I feel like even if you did, you're still rewarded for that, you know, quite in many situations in seafood. So it's sort of, there's this small room for the player to play how they would, you know, if they were a martial artist. And I think that's really commendable.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess just to talk about it for a little bit for anyone that's listening, that hasn't played the game but still wanted to listen. The general idea is instead of enemies and your player just having a hit point system, a health bar, you have a health bar, but that's separate from this other bar, which is in a lot of games, it'll be called something like a stagger meter, essentially, but it's called structure. So it'll be a structure bar. And your structure is strongest when there's nothing in the bar. So you want the idea is that structure gets built up or filled out when the more that you are blocking things, if you're blocking but not parrying, so the more you're taking attacks. And if your structure gets hit so much that it gets too full, then the enemy will put you in a place where you are staggered and you can't defend yourself for a short amount of time. And then that's when you take heavy damage. But then the same thing applies for how you attack other enemies, right? The idea is that you can either be somebody that just dodges attacks and then does damage, or you can be someone that goes for staggering or hitting people's structure, which is the way that I like to play most of the time. And that's when you get to do all the cool takedowns and stuff too, especially those weaker enemies, man. The small grunt dudes, those are the ones that make the fight encounters like feel so fluid, because usually the smaller guys are the ones who attack you first. You parry them immediately. Then you do the flurry of light attacks with a heavy punch. And it's like within 2 seconds you get to do a takedown and you're jumping. Like, it's so cool. Yeah. It's so great. Yeah, so I remember being like way too aggressive at the start. Like, I just wanted to hit things because I felt like that's what I was supposed to be doing. But then I kept getting into those situations where I was like, okay, like I thought I knew what I was doing, but clearly I don't, because I'm getting into situations where I'm not being aggressive in a good way. I like this isn't controlled. Like, I'm basically just hitting things until someone else hits me harder than I'm hitting them, and then I'm in trouble. I remember texting you late, like over the summer, I think, when I was playing, and it was kind of this, like, I don't know, like somewhat cheesy moment, but I had this moment where I was like, oh, this is what the game is trying to teach me. I need to feel the kung fu. I'm like,
yeah,
like I need to stop hitting things, and I need to just be still. I need to like wait for them to come to me and be like, and it sounds dumb to say it that way, but feeling. That's literally like how you get better at the game is like,
yeah, it is.
Which is, there's a few things like this in the game, and several of which I kind of realized today, but that's like one of those really cool things where it's really hard to tell if it was intentionally done by the developers to design it in that way where it forces you to think that way. Like, I don't know how many other people who've played the game have like had that similar moment to me where they realized, oh, there's actually like this aspect of like the teaching of kung fu that like I actually as a gamer need to like embody. It's like a weird thing. I don't know. It sounds so dumb to talk about out loud, but like that's literally what happened. Is I think I did at least a dozen attempts at the club. Like, I was getting my butt kicked. Mm-hmm. And even like, you know, you do all that work and then you get to the final boss. I think his name is Sean in this one. What's his like subtitle name? Sean the fighter. You get like, you do all the work to get to him, and then it becomes a thing of I get my butt kicked by him immediately. So now it's a ton of more attempts to just to get back to him, to practice against him more.
Yeah.
I had a really, really tough time with the club. That's more or less like what made me put down the game last year. And not in like an I can't do this anymore type way, but like, it was like, I've tried this for a few hours. I need to put this down.
You need to say it's got a little
busy and
yeah.
And all of a sudden it was the middle of the fall semester, right? So
right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm trying to remember if there's anything else from that like first initial play.
I think what you were talking about, because you said like you weren't sure if the development was like like their goal was maybe cultivating this one feeling of like you actually feeling, you know, the kung fu and the martial art itself, and maybe changing the way that you approach the game. And I have a few references that I've found. First of all, the team apparently consulted a kung fu master to ensure that the martial arts that they were doing were authentic. And then the kung fu style specifically, and excuse my pronunciation, Bak Mei. The team, they say that they wanted to emphasize mastery through practice, which is a key value of kung fu that is specifically referenced and reflected in the aging system, particularly. But I wouldn't say it's a stretch to say that they also kind of wanted you to feel the game in that sort of sense of like waiting or feeling like, because I would often play Sifu, and I would get to this after hours and hours of playing, I would reach this moment of like, okay, I know I am better. I know I am better than all of these NPCs that I'm looking at. I just need to wait for them to make a mistake so then I can exploit it. Like, it's very much, and I guess that's just sort of learning the game in a way. And we do that with any game that we would play. You know, to a certain extent, the game has mechanics. You can't do anything outside of those mechanics, you know, and in that sense, you're learning sort of maybe how the developers want you to play a game, you know, if it's not particularly like a sandboxy sort of design. And this could be argued that Sifu does this, where maybe that was the intended vision. And it's almost sort of hard to tell, because how it all comes together is it's almost like black magic or something. Like, you sort of have that turning point in the gameplay where you just feel so in sync with the controls and the environment, and that's just part of what I think makes the game feel so good.
Yeah, I think probably the other important bit of context just for people listening is so what's interesting about Sifu and its presentation is really not until like the end of the game does like this anything narratively feel like more deep than it is at the beginning. It's essentially a revenge story. So at the beginning of the game, there's a prologue sequence, and you actually play as the enemy character, which by the way, I totally forgot until I beat the game today, and I was like, I actually want to restart this and just remind myself of some things. I totally forgot about that. So you play as who actually is the enemy of the game, to go infiltrate your old Kung Fu master's dojo or training ground. Because you have had quarrels in the past and wrongdoings to each other, and you go there to kill him and steal this valuable item that's there. And then after that happens, it's revealed that this young kid that was a student there witnesses this, and the master that was just killed is actually that child's father. And then a time skip happens, and it turns out that the protagonist who you're playing as, who is unnamed, people just call him the student or the protagonist, that's who you're playing as. And the whole point of the game is to go get revenge on these five dudes that were there that day that your father got killed, right? So that's the general pacing of it. And so Gabe, you briefly mentioned the aging system. That's like the other thing that is like so unique about this and is really, really fascinating to me. So kind of to explain that a little bit, you start the game after this jump, you start at age 20. And the way it'll work is this special relic that I briefly mentioned, you now have, and what it does is it allows you the ability to come back to life. Which is just a fancy, I guess, kind of narratively accurate video gamey way of incorporating like a life system, I guess. But it works for the story, right? But the way it'll work is you start at age 20, and your age kind of becomes, it kind of actually does become like your lives, almost kind of like in a Mario game or something. If you die one time, you have a, like a death counter now that'll go up to one. And so then when you revive, your age goes up to 21. If you die again, your death counter goes up to 2, and then when you revive, your age will go up to 2, and now you're at 23. And so this really interesting system happens, right? Where, and once you get to age 70, right? That's the oldest you can be. And then after that point, if you die, then it's a game over and you have to
That's a
just
permanent death.
restart the hideout. That's a permanent death. So it becomes this right off the bat, the game does this really interesting thing of communicating to you as the player that, especially if you're like me and you find out way early in the game what your max number of ages are, you learn really quickly, oh, okay, I have to like manage how many years of my protagonist's life I spend in each level so that I can make it to the end of the game. Because what'll happen is whatever age you're at when you beat the hideout, that save point will be at that age, right? And then what encourages you to go back and play it again, right, is you can restart that level now being better and knowing the combat a little bit better and try to beat the level at a younger age, right?
You're constantly encouraged to go back and do, 'cause if you can beat a stage and you gain 25 years of life, you're encouraged to go back and, shave a few years off of that. Maybe do it in 15 or t only age 10 years, and then you get to the next stage, and then you get to save that progress, and then you get to keep starting that subsequent stage from that younger number. And so you can kind of work on your run and different stages and different parts of the run as you see fit, where you want to shave off more time. Maybe you don't want to work on something that's particularly difficult at a given moment. And this is, it's such a fascinating mechanic, because one, it fits in narratively with the talisman and age, and this idea that mastery and wisdom comes with age and growing old and understanding. Like, that's how we accrue what we call like mastery, I suppose. And then the other thing being, I don't know if you noticed this, but as you get older, there's both this kind of negative feedback loop and a positive feedback loop like happening at the same time. And as you age, you get less health because you're older and more frail, but you deal more damage. You are more
It's
powerful.
every 10, every multiple of 10.
Yeah, there you go. And I find that very, that's really, really cool, because the game is punishing you in one sense for doing poorly, but also rewarding you for, some basically an integer that's just tracking your age and demonstrating some sort of mastery. And I think that's really, really cool.
There's just such a cool feedback loop of, like I mentioned, everything feeling fair and then being encouraged to try things again. Like even the upgrades you can get, every level has like a certain number of these like jade statues you can find, right? And then you get to choose from 9 different upgrade options. But there's 3 of the options that are dependent on like what your score in the level is. So you can only select those upgrades if you've done well enough in the level that you can actually select those, right? And then there's another one that has to do with experience points, which is a very similar thing. You can choose to either use those experience points on moves to use, or you can use them on those semi-permanent, just for the sake of this conversation, upgrades. But then there's the other ones that are based on what age you're at. And there's like, so I think there's one that like, if you're older than 25 in the game, you no longer can select that option. There's anything, I think the next one's 40 and then 60. I think that's how it goes. So it's like there's this real incentive to like, oh, okay, like if I can just do this level again and just shave off like even a couple more years, if I can just die a couple less times, because narratively you can come back as many times as you want, right? It's just like so cool. Even the levels like the club where I spent like way more time than I probably should have to beat it. Like the first thing I wanted to do was, okay, I beat it. Now I know I can do it. I immediately want to go back and try it again.
Can I do it better?
I remember I did the first level just when I was still like figuring out the game. I think when I moved on to the second level for the very first time, I think I was at something like age 40. I don't know what it was. But it was only after spending a ton of time in level two where I quickly realized that, like, if I don't get better at this, it's really easy for me to get up to 70 years old. That's what in my head was like, okay, what I need to do first is I need to go do level one way more times so that I can start level two. I think my goal was like 10 years. Like, yeah. If I can get to level two being at 30 years or less, like, that's awesome.
There you go. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really cool. You get to go back as much as you want.
Yeah. You can give yourself benchmarks to work off of. And that feeling of like when you finish that second club and you're like 50 years old and you're like, well, okay, club is really hard. There's no way I can, maybe I could shave off a little bit, but I got like 25, I got like 20 years from that. And then you're like, wait a second, I probably also got 20 years from the garden, the first stage. And, and you're like, but with all this experience that I've accrued from tougher enemies and, you know, bigger encounters, I could probably do well at the garden now. So let me go back to the very first stage. And all of a sudden you're shaving like 15 years off of your age. And even if the club, even if you're not better at the club, you know, you've shaved off a huge amount off your age that you can then like proceed with from that point. Yeah. So you can kind of customize your route in that, in that way. And people cite that as sort of like a roguelike adjacent.
A
roguelike adjacent, I suppose, sort of mechanic where you're taking this mastery and then reapplying it, getting farther, doing things more efficiently.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, I'm trying to think. So from there, I didn't actually beat the club until, I mean, I think it was sometime in this past September when I picked the game back up. It was one of those weird things where a lot of fellow musicians I've talked to will talk about this with regards to like practicing. And Gabe and I both have played tennis or play tennis in our lives. I find the same thing with tennis. Like, and the same with practicing music or whatever. It's like, you get this idea in your head that like if you go like one day without practicing, you'll get worse. But like I'll have times where I like, you know, sometimes like having a long, long break from something, I'll come back and I'm like, wait, I'm actually like better at this than I was before. So I had the same experience with Sifu. I came back and I was like, I got, I think at that point I hadn't beat it yet, but it was like, I was expecting to have to like go through the whole process again of like learning the game. And I mean, I did for a little bit, but like, it maybe took me a couple of rooms in the level. And then I was like, okay, here's where I am. And then that first attempt back, I got all the way to the final boss. And I was like, okay. I was like, okay, we're back. You know?
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. Like the gameplay is so well tuned.
Yeah.
You can almost call it an instrument, just like that. The same way as like you practice every day for like 2 months, like piano or an instrument or something. And you're like, I've hit my cap. And then you don't practice for like 4 days and you come back to it. And all of a sudden your brain just needed time to digest that information and like understand what you've achieved. And then all of a sudden you can play it, you know, first, second try. It's like, it's right there. And it's, isn't that like a crazy, crazy feeling?
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Dude. S-Rank Supports podcast is also like a practice pedagogy podcast for musicians.
That's our side gig.
Music people, come on board. Come on. So I don't know, kind of jumping ahead. So I kind of got through that. I think when I was playing it a little bit this past semester, I remember getting through the club and like immediately having that adrenaline rush of like, okay, I'm going to tackle the next thing. The next one is Kuroki, the artist, right? You're like in this big art museum. So this is a really creepy place. She's probably like the creepiest, I think, of...
She is a little scary.
Of the five. She's pretty
especially
scary.
Especially when you get to the second phase of her fight with the makeup and... it's a little, it's intense. I would just describe it as intense. But
well, her pretty makeup that's like culturally significant, right?
Well,
I think it starts raining in the level or something.
Yeah, and it starts to smear.
Yeah. So it's like a horror movie. Oof. Almost her makeup is smeared and her eyes are going crazy and he's nuts. That one I had a really hard time with.
I think you messaged me. I think that was one of the times that you messaged me and you were like, the museum is kicking my butt.
The museum was the only level that I felt I needed to look up some help.
Mm.
And I'm glad I did. I don't usually love doing that, but I would not have figured it out if I didn't look it up. That video, I think, kind of helped me for the rest of the game. Something I struggled with pretty much throughout my playthrough until the final couple levels was I had a really hard time getting the groove of basically any of the, there's the grunts, and then there's the grunts that have more health and they do those the attacks that glow orange, so they do more structure damage. There's those guys, and then there's sub bosses, and then there's the big bosses. Anyone that did those orange glowy attacks, I could not figure out how to handle those dudes. It felt like they were able to deflect my stuff way more easily. At that point, I had been playing the whole game trying to parry everything all the time because I couldn't reliably do dodging. I hadn't figured out dodging yet. I was in my mind, one, I felt worse at dodging, and two, it felt like this is more work for less reward. Even if I manage to dodge it, I don't get a chance to parry and do attacks, right? So at that point, I was pretty much exclusively trying to parry stuff, which doesn't work for these guys. And that's kind of a cool balancing thing in the game, right? It opens up possibilities for different play styles and stuff.
There's definitely a time for guarding. There's a time for dodging. I think the glowing attacks, that I thought that was a symbol or a sign that an attack could not be blocked. Was how I interpreted.
Yeah, I think that might be right too. I'm not remembering.
It's been a while.
They can't
for me,
be.
So
I don't think
sure.
they can be parried, but they can be blocked. But if you block them, they do way more structure damage. Okay. That's their thing.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, I believe that's right. I mean, given I played it 5 hours ago, I think that's how that works.
I'll defer to you in this case for sure.
Anyway, yeah. Yeah, and so looking up that help for Kuroki, that's what introduced me to the idea that especially the big bosses, it's all about dodging.
Yes.
Which that's why I spent so much time with Sean in the club, was he might even be harder than Kuroki in that way, but you can't block his stuff. He's constantly flipping his bow staff at you. And you never know if he's going to go above or under. So it's that doesn't work. So that was a huge thing for me. And then once I figured that out, Kuroki's fight's actually pretty easy. All you got to do, that's what really keyed me into the idea of, I actually need to be spending way more energy paying attention to the cues in the character's choreography that indicate what move they're about to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then that indicates what direction I dodge in. From there, then it's the tower level. I beat the tower level on my first try. I don't know what happened.
I had a similar experience. I got to the tower and it still took a few tries for me, but I remember it being significantly easier. The club, at least.
Yeah. I mean, I think once I got that help for Kuroki, and I understood the whole dodge thing and looking for the direction of their attacks. I think it's Jin Fei. Is that right? Jin Fen. She has a similar weapon, and then it's thing on it's a long range attack, on a string. And so in that way, I was this boss is different, but if I just dodge where her attacks are coming from, It's not about blocking. It's about like just waiting for an opening. That was a huge thing for me. And that's why I was so aggressive at the start of the game, is because I thought I had to create my own openings by being aggressive.
Right.
But that does
Interesting.
not work for the bosses at all.
Yeah, they're a different breed.
Yeah, the
Swooped
only
on from the
go ahead.
tower pretty quickly, and then
Yeah,
the
got through the tower pretty
monastery.
quick. Although that first time I got through it, you know, every single level, what I did is like I got to it at the age I wanted to. And then I was like, I just need to beat this level once. I don't care what age I ended at, but I just need to beat it once so I understand how it works. And then I'll go
Right.
back and do it again. So I
Right.
think I ended that one at like probably like 72 or something, like last life, you
Old
know?
enough to retire. Yeah.
Right. Yes, exactly. Old enough to retire from Kung Fu. Yeah, went back that one. I don't know why that level runs horribly on the Switch. Not horribly. It wasn't so different from anything else. There's one. Like there's like a couple corners once you go down to the basement. I don't know if it's because I was playing during the daytime. Like I tried to change the curtains on my windows and stuff. It was pitch black. I literally could not, and I have pretty good eyesight. I could not see where I was going. That was frustrating. There were a couple times where I just died because I just walked off the edge because I
Oh
literally could
yeah.
not see where I was going. And then
That's
all of a sudden
fair.
enemies would pop up and it's like,
Right.
I can't
Yeah.
see you. That's like
How's a
one of the
guy
only
supposed to
moments
fight?
where I couldn't tell if it was a game design choice or
Right. Okay.
if they just messed up.
You know, I don't remember having any huge like visibility issues. So maybe I'm curious if that's something that'll just improve when you break it open on the PlayStation. Maybe,
Maybe I
but
just need my
I
eyes
do
checked.
remember because
I
the
don't
end of the tower, right? There's a little segment where you just go down some cliff edges in
know.
this circle, but there's a huge chasm in the
Yeah.
center that you can fall down.
Yep.
Yeah, that's funny picturing you just getting hurtled off into an abyss because you can't see anything.
Well, and today when I was working on beating it, I did that level a couple times because I wanted to get my age down before the
Right.
final fight. And I was just so frustrated because I would have a really good run where I was at a really low age, and then I would like die a couple more times because I just couldn't see the dang floor. Anyway, that's enough about that. Yeah, I spent most of the time today. I probably played it like actual playing the game probably 4 or 5 hours today. Maybe a little bit more. Most of that time was fighting Yang, who is the big boss.
Yeah, Yang is
And
tough.
yeah, in the sanctuary. That was a cool fighting Yang for the first time was like when all the gears started to come into place about different lore stuff in the game. And I'm really excited for us to talk about all the parallels and like this kind of cyclical thing going on between the protagonist and Yang. This is kind of something I've been diving into between recording this and beating the game. Yeah, so the first thing that kind of got my brain spinning on that was it was kind of a cool, not plot twist, but surprise. Yang's moveset is your moveset, which was really cool. I was not expecting that because up until that point, all the bosses have their own unique thing going on. They have their
Yeah.
own unique weapon and their own unique moveset. There's a couple moves that Yang has that I think are kind of either derived from or similar to other bosses. He has this move where he jumps up on the side of the wall and like slams down his foot on you. That's kind of similar to Fahar's move, kind of. I don't
Yeah.
remember, but I don't know if, I mean, they're kind of similar. But anyway, yeah, I don't know.
So did you when was the first time you attempted the sanctuary?
Today.
Have you today? So
Today.
you first attempt and beating the games, that all
I mean,
happened
it took
today,
a
huh?
few hours of dedicated work,
I can imagine, but
but
still, that's quite impressive.
yeah. I mean, before we talk about that though, in the ending, I mean, I realize. Tell me a little bit more about your favorite bosses in the game.
Oh,
What are some of your favorite levels that you remember?
yeah.
I kind of blazed through them because, you know, this is the game you assigned to me, but I want to make sure that we hear a little bit about what you enjoyed too.
Yeah, well, I might not have anything
Yeah.
crazy to say because it's been a while, so I
Or
won't
whatever you
remember some of
remember.
my highlights, but the club definitely being one of my favorites, just for the audio visual, like sensory overload. The museum was awesome because I
Yeah, it's
remember
really cool.
there's a one segment I'm sure I think we've talked about where in the museum, if you do all like the side corridors, like the first time you do it the way that you're supposed to do it, which is you just progress through the level linearly. There at one point they some illusion is cast on you and you're in this really dark space with like two barriers and enemies just start flooding you from the darkness. And I think that is like the singular encounter in the whole game where it's just two dozen enemies or some, it feels ridiculous. And I was, that was quite frustrating, but really fun to look back on because I just remember fighting for my life to get through these hordes. And then I beat Kuroki, which was so fun. I think she's my favorite boss, because of the she uses like the dismembered staff in like the first phase, and then there's a total weapon switch to the kunai for the second phase of the fight, and just the surroundings from like the beautiful snow to like this sort of water painting, blue and white, hokusai reminiscent sort of wave-like environment.
It's
Like
very
surrounding
like
you.
Final Fantasy JRPG, like final boss,
Very much is.
abyss room.
Yes. Yeah. Similar to the Towers boss fight. But it's something about maybe something about Kuroki's fight kind of scratched that itch for me because I remember very much enjoying that. I remember enjoying her agility. She's so she like darts around the room and you have to time your dodges really well. At some point she'll throw kunai at you and just the way the protagonist is animated when he does that like duck where he moves his shoulder and then feeling a kunai go past you, it just makes you feel so slick.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And I think if you do a certain input command, you can catch them. And then you can use it
Whoa, okay.
against her, either by throwing it or in some small combo or whatever. I don't really remember, but I do remember
Yeah.
that it's possible if your timing is good enough. I think it might be a parry because if you mistime it, you just get cut. So
Okay.
I do remember that it's a little give and take because, an
Yeah, I'll have
antithesis to
to
that
check
is
that
like,
out because I know you can do that with other projectiles, but I didn't think
yeah.
about doing it with the kunai.
Yeah,
That's
you can do
cool.
it with the kunai, which is really cool.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I enjoyed that fight a lot for that. I enjoyed the tower aesthetically. Just it was so like it's literally a nice looking corporate tower, and then all of a sudden there's like rocky chasms and stuff, and that sort of visual duality was super fun to explore. I do remember feeling overwhelmed in one or two of the tower's rooms. I really like the museum partly because of how easy it is to do on a rerun, because once you beat it once, and I think I texted you about this, you get like the keys to the museum and like information and data about it. And then if you reattempt the museum, there's two goons at the entryway, and then you run to the elevator and you go straight up to Kuroki, and you don't have to do any of the other shenanigans that goes down in the museum. So partly I like it, which is just I'm sure the developers were being a little cheeky
Yeah,
when they
maybe.
designed it like that, because that one room with like two dozen enemies, and then the next time you're doing it, you hop in an elevator, you skip it all. You
Yeah,
know, it just it feels.
I think all of the levels are kind of structured that way, some more than others, but like the skip you can do usually skips like the harder rooms. So it's like once you've beat it once, they're like, okay, we're allowing you to now use the skip. You got to get some of them. I mean, in the art museum, it's literally like the two guys at the front, and then you go up the elevator.
Yeah, that's the most dramatic skip.
Yeah, and the other ones, I mean, the Sanctuary for me is the most recent in my mind, but like that one is, there's like one guy at the entrance, and then
there's like three guys.
You can do the skip courtyard immediately, yeah. But that then there's the big courtyard you still have to get through.
And then at that point, I think Yang is like right there.
Yeah.
Right. So
although the courtyard is like some of the hardest enemies in the level.
That's true. Yeah.
Anyway.
But yeah, and then the Sanctuary, whole lot of fun. There's one part of the courtyard where there's just it's just a bar, like a handrail. Like over, like sort of on this platform overlooking basically fog, like on the edge of this cliff. And I have funny memories of like running over there so everyone will follow me, and then I'll like stun them and throw them over the edge.
You
of
know,
the...
it wasn't until today that I saw a video of somebody doing a similar thing in the art museum. Like they just collected all the enemies by a railing. And then they kept doing the thing where they push enemies. I didn't know you could do that. So it was just this 30-second clip of guys, like, you would bait them, and then he'd push them off the side, and then he'd bait them, and he'd push them off
the side.
So stupid, but I love that that's, like, a thing you can do. That's awesome.
Right? It's so funny.
Yeah.
My only other highlight was the Towers boss, Jinfang with the meteor hammer. That was so cool. And her only having like one arm to do that made me feel like I respected her more for some reason because of that. Going into that fight, and that's one of the only fights where you're very much rewarded for jumping, because otherwise the low meteor hammer swipe is going to take a whole, adds a huge chunk to your, to your gauge. And sort of the distance, it was sort of reminiscent of the Kuroki fight, because she would get distance from you and then dash around, but she would just take her meteor hammer and just poke at you from afar.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, okay, I'm very much, I have to play by your rules a little bit.
Right.
Which is fun. It's just, it feels like the bosses almost test slightly different skills
totally.
In that regard, you know?
Yeah.
I think so.
So then moving on to Yang's fight, unless there's anything else you want to say, I think this is where we should start talking about is all this different lore stuff that like has kind of blown my mind. My kind of whole like perspective on the game really changed like today when I was like beating it. I was never not enjoying the game, but I remember the whole time feeling like it's not a game that is like about narrative necessarily. Like it's not a narrative focused game. So that's not what really was bugging me, but I did feel this sort of sense of like flatness to what was going on in like my engagement, because like you beat a boss, you do the final finishing attack move, you see them collapse on the floor, and then you show up back at your dojo ready to like go back out. Like, and there's like no sense of like it feels good in the sense of like of your, as the player, your objective is to get revenge, right? That's what the game presents to you. You're like, okay, that's one more level being like, I feel good. Which we'll kind of talk more about later, but I think that's another cool one of these like subconscious game design philosophy things that's baked in, right? Kind of lost my train of thought, sorry. But when you get to Yang, like this is the kind of big moment where you're like, okay, this is a guy I've actually really been after. And this is kind of also the moment where things, I think, start to click into place about just like the morality of the stuff that's brought into everything, which is really where all this stuff kind of gets blown up and becomes a lot more rich and complicated in a really cool way. So I don't know. Well, let me ask you first. Did you know that you could spare people?
No,
I didn't know either.
I didn't. And it's funny because when my brother was playing this before I picked it up, I didn't know, but apparently he was playing. We were on vacation somewhere, I think, and he was just playing in the living room and I was passing through and he like the cutscene, he triggered the cutscene to spare Jinfeng like right in front of me as I was walking between him and like the TV. And I looked at the TV and I was like, that's cool. And then I kept walking.
Store that for later.
And I didn't. I totally forgot that happened. So no, I had no idea going in and through the first time. Although on reading a like synopsis to try and like refresh myself of what happened, it seems like, and maybe you can tell me exactly how it goes down because you just did it, but apparently you beat Yang and then the game is, it immediately says something like, that's not how you're supposed to do it. There's this thing called Wude, and that's how you're supposed to do it. Now go back and try again, but like following the principles of like Wude.
Yeah,
And that's
so
supposed to be your first big like hint, you know, something is different. I should be approaching this differently.
yeah, so what I'm assuming you got the same as me is, and that probably neither of us knew, we got the bad ending. So yeah, you. I spent hours today figuring out how to beat Yang. It took me forever.
Yang is tough.
He's really tough.
He's a tough
You
cookie.
finally beat him. Your character, like, the cutscene triggers. Your character basically just like looks at his dead body on the ground and like kind of like has like a like disappointed exhale, and then it goes to this cutscene of a kid. And he's having like a flashback in front of a couple graves. And then the game ends. And I actually didn't know until looking at a video briefly, because this guy was talking about having a similar experience to what we had. But when you get that bad ending, the credits don't even roll, which I didn't realize, actually. This guy was talking about how the credits didn't roll, so that made him think, like, okay, I must have
It's
missed
not
something.
over.
Which I had the same thought. I just didn't think about the fact that there weren't credits. So like that happened, and I was like, what? I don't
You're just looking
know
around like
what. I was like, okay, I must have missed something. Really, the actual very first thought I had, because I don't think you told me anything about there being multiple endings. I don't think I heard that from anybody. But the very first thought I had was, are there different endings? And I'm actually remembering right now, because this whole time I'm trying to beat Yang, right? During this whole process, at one point or another, I had the thought like it would be really not in a bad way, but predictable that in a revenge story there might be a plot twist at the end where the protagonist decides not to actually kill him, right? Like that's a thought I had in my head, was like I would not be surprised if that happens. But then that option didn't show up at all. And not only did it not show up at all, but like once you kill the dude, like there's nothing, like there's no resolution, there's no info, there's no like epilogue, there's nothing. So immediately I had the thought, I was like, are there different endings in this game? So the first thing I did was look up Sifu multiple endings question mark, and like I was like, oh yeah, I got the bad ending. And that just sent me in this whole rabbit hole of like, yeah, it turns out you can spare the bosses, which I didn't know about. And the game doesn't tell you that, which is a really interesting thing.
It doesn't, no. I remember that frustrating me a little because I had to hear about it from my brother, you know, who played it first and was like, now you just do it again, but whenever you have the option to kill like the big bads, you don't, you know, and that's the only difference. And you know, I went back and I did that, and it was I mean, you looked up the cutscene and stuff that plays when you reach that point after sparing everyone,
Yeah,
but
so
it is a
yeah.
cool ending, but it's not, you know, it's not too like different, but that is the
I
true
still want to
ending.
go back and spare each of them myself.
Yeah.
I
And what
got.
I, go ahead, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so just for the sake of time, like today I watched the three different endings. I actually went back and started a new file just because I wanted to see what the prologue was again, because like I there it raised the ending raised some questions for me where I was like, okay, I want to check that out. And then I just did the first level again, to try sparing him, just to see. So like I saw that one.
Oh,
But you go
nice.
ahead. Yeah, you were gonna say
Yeah, and I
something.
was gonna say that it's kind of fun because sparing, it's harder than killing. Because when you
Yes.
spare them, they're like, well, you chump. Now I'm back at like half my health, which is a lot for a boss, and you're gonna have to keep fighting me. And it's like, well, that's disheartening. And then you have to spare them again in order to actually trigger the sparing cutscene and obtain all the elements of Wude that you're trying to do. And as I was watching a really quick playthrough just to remind myself of some core events and how they like the gameplay looks, when you first try sparing Yang, he's like, don't do that. I don't want your pity. Don't like disrespect me by trying to do that. And then lo and behold, you spare him again if you've done the other four, trigger true ending, you know. And I think that's a really cool idea because, you know, that platitude of like be the bigger person by, you know, showing mercy and being nice basically and not going after revenge, it is literally harder in this game because you have to work more for it. And I just thought that, I don't know if that's, you know, their thesis statement by any means with this project, but encouraging the player to work harder to be the bigger, better person narratively, fantastic message. You know? And that really clicked with me mechanically, you know, it really hit home.
So I mean, this is the stuff I'm the most excited to talk about is because this is where there's like multiple layers of like not only mechanics but like psychologically and message narrative wise, like all these things are happening on like parallel lines and you don't even realize they're happening until you finish the game and you find all this stuff out. To circle back a little bit to you mentioned once you I think it's I don't know if it's just the bad ending, I'm not remembering, but and this isn't word for word, but there's essentially this line that's spoken. I think it's the voice of Sifu, and he's essentially quoting this line that's saying someone that has both Kung Fu and Wuda, which someone that has both Kung Fu and Wuda, like that's the type of person that's essentially almost an equivalent of like enlightenment that they're kind of talking about.
Yeah.
And they say that that person will strike with fists as fast as lightning, and the other person won't be able to fight them. That's not exactly, but it's more or less what that's about.
Right.
And one of my roommates right now actually is she's Taiwanese, and so she actually helped me a little bit with some of the stuff. I had all these
Oh.
questions about like
Oh, cool.
all these Mandarin Chinese words
Yeah.
and some of the cultural stuff. So she was helping me out a little bit.
What did you learn?
Well, so first of all, just a lot of the game's kind of message that you're talking about comes down to this idea of Wuda, which is other synonyms for it might be, I don't know, like chivalry or kind of like the like warriors, the way
The
that like a
warrior
samurai
spirit.
holds themselves. Like, you
Okay.
know, there's like all that stuff that's like it's not just about being a good warrior, it's about like manners and like the way you
Following a
present
code.
yourself and the way
Okay.
you fight, right? So that's really what it's all about, is this idea of Wuda, and it's like the morality of fighting, and it's like you don't fight for violence, you fight in defense and all that type of stuff. And so when that quote is happening, it's kind of this message that it's like, yeah, you achieved your goal, like you got revenge, but you also failed as a Kung Fu student.
Yeah.
Right? It's
Yeah.
like that's kind of what it's communicating. And
Yeah.
that's where this kind of circle, this all this full circle stuff kind of starts happening, is because the start of the game begins with Yang being the bad guy, which that's what he's doing, right? He's essentially enacting his revenge, and he's not embodying this idea of Wuda, and that's why Sifu doesn't accept him as a student.
Yeah.
And so then you as the protagonist go on this whole journey, spending your whole life, right?
Doing
to achieve this goal.
Thing.
And it isn't until the very end that you realize that you aren't doing what your master would have wanted you to do either.
Yeah.
So it's really, really interesting thing. And I think the game, the fact that the game doesn't communicate that to you is why that moment is so cool.
Yeah.
I think if it was like, this is a horrible comparison, but like the only other game I can think of off the top of my head that like has a spare option is Undertale. Like in Undertale, there's always the spare button. So you know it's there. But like if every time you fought one of these bosses, at some point a spare button pops up, like probably like half the people playing this game would choose spare. Like, I don't know, either see what happens or they wanted to.
And mechanically, it's a weird phenomenon because like Undertale bosses are incredibly difficult.
Right.
A lot of them are really hard.
Yeah.
And so if I don't know what spare is going to do, and there is even a small chance that it's going to prolong my suffering when I've finally gotten to this point of this battle where I can like end it forcibly when I've already poured 2 hours of my life into mastering that one fight. I mean, I would not choose despair. I would like end my suffering because I get like, I'll get nervous about like what could happen. And so it's very interesting when you give the player, again, going into that idea earlier where it's like you give the player the option to spare, but that is probably not going to be convenient. But if you're willing to work for it, you'll get to something even greater. And that sort of message, you know, or that theme is super, super prevalent. And I love the parallels that you're talking about and how the protagonist goes through the exact same journey that Yang did, basically fulfilling this quest for vengeance. And then you get to Yang, and just as you said near the beginning of our chat, Yang's moveset is your moveset. Like, and you are literally almost the same person in a lot of, you know, respects. But the fact that you can replay the game and become something better with Wuda, you know, implies that Yang could have gotten there too, but maybe he just have the diligence or the resources or the training or what have you. You know?
Yeah, like this is one of the cool like psychological elements we're talking about is I just like the fact they don't communicate that there's even a possibility of sparing people subconsciously totally immerses you in all you really know about the protagonist you're playing as. He doesn't even have a name, for God's sake. All you know is that he's in a he or she, I forgot until I replayed it that you could actually, I didn't know you could actually select a boy or a girl. I didn't know that. I totally forgot. Because all the promotional materials with the guy.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. It's all got a guy on it. I also forgot that.
I totally forgot. Anyway, all you know about the protagonist is that they're in this blind rage for revenge. So in this really nerdy psychological thing that I love, it's like that totally immerses you because it's like as a player, as soon as you have the opportunity to kill this guy, you're going to kill him. Because your goal as the player is the same as the protagonist, where all you care about is getting to the end of the level and killing the guy at the end and then going to the next guy. So it's like by not communicating that option to you, you would have no reason to think that there's any other option. Just as if you were this guy who was in this blind rage for revenge, you'd be stuck in this idea that the only thing I can ever do to be happy again is to kill all these guys. Like, so anyway, that's just like, that totally blew my mind. I like loved that. There was a couple other, I took all these different notes because I just kept noticing different parallels and things going on. A couple other like really cool full circle things that happened. I'm so glad I like just started a new save just to see what happened. In all three of the different ending cutscenes, when you finally beat Yang, there's like a longer than usual, like they have a brawl out for a minute and they're cutscene, right? Just to make it more epic. The very final strike that he does to the gut. I don't know if you ever noticed this. The camera like goes down to like his waist and he's got his fist and then he just jabs him.
Oh yeah.
It's the exact same cut the exact same shot and the exact same punch as Yang's final punch to Sifu at the beginning
on
of the game.
Sifu?
The exact same thing.
Man.
Which I did not know until I played that first like 5 minutes of the game. That's super cool. Also, the second half of Yang's fight, you guys go outside into like this square courtyard where it's like super dark and rainy. The exact same thing happens at the start of the game. The second half of the fight with Sifu, while you're playing as Yang, you guys go out into this outdoor square courtyard at the training ground. And that's where the final fight happens. Like, again, the exact same thing. That was so cool.
Yeah.
Just simply because I started the game in like July and I beat it today.
It's been a journey. It's been
so, quite the journey. So glad I went back and did that.
So many parallels coming full circle. And I saw in my rewatch when the protagonist goes to land that final blow, he's like, it's stuck right off of, it doesn't land, but his fist stops right in front of like Yang's stomach, right? And he starts like shaking.
In the two endings that are not the bad one. Yeah. I think that's right.
And he just falls over.
Like, yeah. That's something I've seen people talking about. And
I totally forgot that happened. Like it's probably just been because it's been a while, but that's so interesting. That's so interesting that would happen in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen people talking about that. I mean, you know, this game is 3 years old now, so I'm sure people have solved these questions by now, but I found that to be a really cool moment because right before you collapse is where some quote or idea about Wuda comes in. And then your character collapses as if the game is trying to communicate that like some cosmic power is not allowing you to achieve your goal because you have fundamentally done this the wrong way. Like you have failed in who you're supposed to be as a kung fu fighter. Right. But then one of the questions people seem to be kind of theorizing about is whether you're brought back to life or you are actually dead. From my perspective, it almost seems like I saw somebody saying as well that Yang brings you back with the talisman is like one of the things that people are talking about. So like Yang becomes this really interesting guy where prior to the ending of the game, you don't think of him as anything more than a bad guy that you're just supposed to be killing at the end. But by the end of the game, you're kind of forced to ask all these questions now about, okay, well, who is he as a person? Why did he get into that situation where he chose to do that bad thing? What does he believe in now? Like, there's all these questions that like make his character a lot deeper than I think he was before, which is really cool. I mean, even he's unique of the five bosses in that he's the only person that's currently using his like power for seemingly actual good. Like at the sanctuary, he's literally healing people and solving illnesses and like actually caring for people. Whereas all the other guys are they had set out with the intention of doing good for other people, like they wanted to as a group, but now we're in a place where they're actually kind of abusing that power for their own benefit.
It says Fajar is now works for a gang of drug traffickers.
Right.
Because his power is chlorokinesis, which is plant manipulation.
Right.
Sean, who runs his own martial arts school and an illegal underground fight club, pyrokinesis. Kuroki, who runs an art gallery as a front for organized crime, and Jinfang, the wealthy booked businesswoman. So yeah, you're totally right. And I actually never thought about that. So I'm so glad you put that's amazing. Amazing. Because Yang is the ringleader, and those four were his henchmen, and only he is like doing, you know, as you say, he's the only one actually doing good, you know. So yeah, it does make Yang a super fascinating character.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that people kind of theorize about, and it's kind of the thing that short secret ending clip that we had talked about a little bit, kind of it heats up the conversation a little bit, is people are theorizing about, or have been, the game brought up the idea of, like, why did Yang, or how did you as the protagonist, survive at the beginning of the game? Because I keep forgetting what Fajar, like, Yang has him kill you as a kid at the very beginning of the game, but then you wake up, right? And you have the talisman.
So presumably it was from the talisman,
Right.
possibly.
Yeah. So I think kind of the idea is that, like, Yang wanted you, like, Yang saw himself in you and wanted you to be a better version of who he could have been. The other kind of, like, evidence for this idea, so, you know, as soon as I beat the game and looked up this idea of multiple endings, when you go to the bad ending, the transition to this, like, backstory thing is as a kid, but I didn't think about it until I looked this up and saw some people talking about it, is that it's not clear whether or not that's you as a kid or that's Yang as a kid. Because then the stuff that's happening in the background, the talking that's happening, the two gravestones, are supposed to represent Yang's wife and kid that
Oh
died.
yeah.
But
The
it's
protagonist
not,
only ever lost his dad.
right. So it's
Wow.
not super clear. My first thought was maybe that's me, and one of the gravestones is for Sifu, and one of them's for Yang somehow. Like, that's why, because now there's two people dead. That was my first thought. But
Dang.
there's a big gravestone and a small gravestone, so I definitely think it's, like, supposed to be Yang's dead wife and kid. But it's
Okay.
not really clear whether or not the actual kid is Yang or you.
Right, because Yang loses his wife and kid as an adult, presumably.
One thing I was trying to figure out is, because in the ending cutscene, the kid has, like, scruffed up hair, and he's got really visible freckles. The other issue with this whole thing is I've been looking at this stuff. I was trying this out on the Switch, where all the visuals are blurry. So maybe this whole conversation doesn't mean anything, but I did
Maybe
see
you
people
saw a
talking
different
about it.
version of the game because it was just so freaking blurry. You made all of this up, but it
I
happens to
swear I
be
saw
pretty
other
close
people
to what
talking about
actually.
this. I swear. But then I was trying to compare that to, that's another reason why I wanted to do the start of the game again, is I wanted to see what the kid looks like at the beginning. And this is part of why it's so tricky, is because they're both wearing the same, like, student outfit, student martial artist outfit. So anyway, that's super, I don't know. The one thing I would like to try is, I'd be really interested to see if someone has a playthrough up where they selected a girl to play as. 'Cause that would, I feel like that would confirm it, right? If, like, the kid at the beginning cutscene is a girl, but then at the end it's a guy. That would confirm. I haven't looked, I would love to look into that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's cool. The other, I don't know if you should jump in if you have something to say. I just have all these notes about
No, I love this.
nerdy
I'm learning
stuff I want to
so
share with
much.
you.
I'm learning so much, and it's fresher for you. So keep going. Let him
So you
cook.
kind of just walked through the, like, themes or the abilities of the bosses, right?
Yes.
So the other thing I had no idea about until researching more about the game afterwards is, one of the other cultural Chinese things they tied into the game was the idea of five elements. I didn't know this. In, like, here in the States and in Western culture, we typically think of four elements, right? In traditional Chinese culture, there's actually five, and they're wood, fire, water, metal, and earth. It's actually no air. And I was actually did some research to try to figure this out. From a couple of different sources, it seems that it's a mixture of air is sometimes considered part of earth because it's like part of life force.
Okay.
And the other part of it is because air is kind of thought as life force, it's more associated with like the idea of chi and like life being. So it's not considered. That's just from really rough research. But so the five bosses each represent one of the elements. So Fahar represents wood.
Wood.
Sean fire is fire. With his pyro. Kuroki is water. Jianfeng is metal.
Metal.
And then Yang is earth.
Wow.
The other cool thing I didn't notice until looking it up and reading somebody talking about how those correspond with Sifu is a really minor detail. But I don't know if you remember, but every time you beat a hideout, you arrive back at the protagonist's like home base at a different place in the home base.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that? Each one of those places you arrive at is somewhat related to the element that you just beat. Yeah, so when you beat the first level, the place you arrive back at is at this table in the courtyard where all the trees and the plants are. So you arrive back in like the garden after you just beat the wood based one. When you the fire, okay, there's a couple of them. This is an idea that I read and then I went and checked on my own. So it seems pretty dang accurate. There's a couple of them that seem kind of stretches, but the fact that there is something there makes me believe it more.
Yeah.
The fire one, you come back and you are like ferociously beating up a beanbag or a punching bag, and there's like a bright light next to you. So there's not like actual fire, but there's a bright like heat source,
there's
right?
There's the hints for it. Yeah.
Yeah. When you beat Kuroki, you come back and you arrive back and you are finishing sipping like a cup of tea at a table. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to walk you through all these because this is so nerdy and cool.
Please do.
When you beat Jianfeng, you're in a room that's pretty barren. I'm forgetting like what type of room it is, but it seems kind of like a meditative room. And there's like the only metal thing that I could like identify in the room is there's like the small like gong, like a meditation gong in front of you, like gold. Yes.
Which makes sense because I was reading, I wasn't sure what Jianfeng's power was, but apparently it's just some supernatural bells. I don't know what she does with them, but there's got to be some sort of connection between bells, gong.
Well, her she's the metal element, right?
Right.
So like they're all related to metal in some way. And then Yang he's not like earth directly, like the ground or dirt, but he's more earth as far as like the life force that the earth provides, and that's represented in him like giving life to people and curing illnesses. Like that's his whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, the other then really cool, I'm just gonna keep going. The other cool thing that dovetails off of that is the talisman that you have is the player, right? I asked my roommate about this. She said, she said she couldn't remember what they're actually called, but the special type of weaving that's at the top of it is a special like Chinese type of weaving. It's called Zhangguoshen, and that's what it's called.
Okay.
And the talisman has those like five coins on it, right?
Right.
And as your age goes up in the game, those slowly fade away.
Yes.
So when researching a little bit, one of the symbolism things going on, there's five coins, there's five bosses, and that talisman weaving thing in general kind of represents like luck, and that luck is present in the game through like defying fate, right? Defying death. So it's represented in that way. the idea of them fading away, these five elements are like, it's like having all of them is important to the idea of like Wuda. Balance and Wuda yeah. and enlightenment. Yeah. So the idea is the more of your life that you spend chasing after something that isn't part of the Wuda way, the more of those core elements you're losing, right? Those are slowly fading away until now you have nothing left. You spent your whole life trying to achieve this thing, but you're left with nothing, right?
As symbolized by the
yeah,
the fading talisman.
So that for me was like yeah. so cool. I just was so blown away because the whole game narratively felt so, and like thematic-wise felt so flat to me. And it wasn't until I beat the game that like this whole rabbit hole of like how everything is connected yeah. happens. And that was so cool. Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
I love it.
The only other note I have, and maybe we can end on this unless you have something else you want to talk about.
I know we've been going for a while. I think that was a strong, strong ending. What's your final note? Go.
The only other note I have, I just want to acknowledge how close to the Kung Fu Panda story this game is. This game. I didn't realize this until later today. The enemy is a former student of your master that is aware of the special power that may or may not be congruent to the idea of the Dragon Scroll. And the Dragon Scroll is being held in the middle of the training ground. And he comes back to challenge the master unless he's willing to give it to him.
Yep.
I just wanted.
You just want to throw it out
there. I just want to.
That Sifu may or may not have copyright issues with Kung Fu Panda.
That's why his name is Sifu and not Shifu.
Oh.
Mic drop.
Wow. Mind blown.
Anyway, that was a
mod out there somewhere to put Ho in as the main character.
I'm sure you could do it if you wanted to. Let's look it up real quick.
Panda running around.
Sifu Kung Fu Panda mod. It's literally, it's the first thing that comes up.
No.
These are images of of Po standing in one of these dirty alleys in one of the levels and beating up people.
That's amazing.
Look at that. Well, we can all go check that out later, I guess.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Well, dude, I threw a lot at you. I mean, I wanted to come with a lot because this is the game you assigned me. And
yeah.
Got to do it justice.
I think you did more than do it justice.
You picked a good one.
Yeah? Yeah. I was going to ask, how do you feel?
It took me time to warm up to it, but it paid off.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I'm not a quitter, so.
Yeah. And I think you led the conversation with this game being one of the most rewarding games that, you know, you've played. And I think that's definitely true. I mean, this game, it really makes you feel good for doing that one stage, shaving one more year off of that one encounter, getting through that one boss with a little bit more life left in you, and then also drawing all those parallels narratively with relatively little work. So impressive. I wanted to know your thoughts. I mean, it's an interesting comparison because I think Astral Chain is another great, great combat game, you know, but it's a very different style, approach,
right.
Player experience in a way. And I just thought it would be so fascinating that was like the theme behind our second game swap. Not that they need to have themes, but that this one was a very strong, like, here is two very great ways of doing, you know, combat.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Look at us.
Yeah. Two game swaps
and
down.
Congrats. Yeah. Two game swap. Game swaps. We're going to have to figure out what the third one's going to look like. Get that on the docket. But yeah, congrats again on your your first run of Sifu. I cannot
Thank
wait
you.
for you to play it on not a Switch.
I know, I'm excited. Man, when I
Yeah.
went back and played that first level today, I didn't realize how much better at the game I got.
Yeah.
It's just
Oh, yeah.
destroyed that first level. I remember being so having such a hard time with that first boss, and yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, last thing, I promise. I promise, I almost forgot. At the beginning, you mentioned that someone you know, your brother, I think, got the
Yep.
special edition.
Yep.
That's what I bought. I bought this special. This is the box
There
it
it
comes in.
is. The
But
Redemption
he got, you
Edition?
said he got the Vengeance Edition. I
Yeah,
got the
he did get
Redemption Edition.
the.
And just before we tune off, I'll show you what's in it. Yeah? This big
Yes,
box.
unboxing.
It was.
Whoa.
Those are the
Dang.
big old stand-up figure of him.
Look at him. That looks good.
It comes with a replica of the
No
talisman,
way. Dude,
the whole
you can
shebang.
die as many times as you want now.
I know, dude. I got it all to myself. I'm gonna do whatever the heck I want. Dude, a soundtrack code, a
No
steel
way.
book, art cards, whole
Dude.
art book, dude.
Dude.
We'll have to go
Isn't
through
that
this at some point.
so cool? Isn't it so cool that we're talking about all these themes of the parallels and there's a Vengeance edition in the game and there's a
I know.
Redemption
Speaking of
edition?
parallels, dude, I heard you talking about at the
Wow.
beginning. You were like, I don't know what's in it. And I was like, I do. But I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that until the end. I figured that'd be
A
fun to
pleasant
say. But I
surprise.
almost forgot. I almost forgot.
Oh, I'm so glad you didn't forget. Wow, now I'm jealous. That figure looks good. An art book? Oh, man. Oh, don't cross your arms and give me the smolder.
Yeah. Maybe you should be jealous. Maybe you should.
All right.
Well,
And with that, the second game swap has come to a close. It's been a pleasure.
been a
High
pleasure, Gabe.
bar. It's been a, yeah, been a pleasure, Sai.
To you.
To me.
To me? Oh, to
To me?
me.
Oh, to me.
Oh. Oh.